This is the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the road.
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
All right, joining me on the podcast this week, you can see him everywhere. He's on Laker broadcast, TNT broadcast, college basketball broadcast. But most importantly, you can hear him on Fox Sports Radio every Sunday. It's part of the Chris and Karan show, a little radio show sweeping the nation right now. Karan Butler, my co-host on that show. What's up, Karan?
Man, good, brother. I like that intro, man. Yeah, that was an amazing intro right there.
Well, we got some energy. We're recording this after our show on Sunday, so we had a good show. We're just kind of powering on through.
Yeah, just feeding off that momentum right there. I like it.
You're right. So, finals are over, and you know, as we record this, the dust kind of settling. Golden State, you know, they get their third championship in 4 years. A lot I want to get into in that. I'm going to get to LeBron as well, but you're a guy that played with Kevin Durant. And a couple of years ago, when Kevin Durant signed with Golden State, I assumed he was going to get a championship, probably multiple championships playing for Golden State. But he's exceeded even my expectations out in Oakland. I mean, becoming a two-time finals MVP and really kind of, you know, seizing the mantle of, I don't want to call him the face of that franchise, but one of, not the alpha of that franchise. Has this journey for Durant the last 2 years, has any of it surprised you?
No, not at all. Just because he's been amazing in Oklahoma, and I knew that his time would come. You know, he was hindered by the injury, the ankle injury. He had surgery, and, you know, I felt like he was the best story in sports for some time, the MVP speech and everything, and then the injury happened, and then that's kind of like when Steph Curry and the Splash Brothers kind of took over the association. They took over. They was playing exceptionally well. LeBron was being dominant, as he accustomed to doing. But Kevin Durant, like, kind of resurfaced and put himself right into the forefront of the conversation. And he put himself in the finals where he went against the best player in LeBron James. And he had those type of performances. And he's 2-0 against him in the finals, you know, as of late, you know, 2-3 overall. So it's just amazing to see how well-rounded he has become from a player offensively, passing the ball, rebounding the ball, defending in tough situations. And, you know, he's up there now, man. He's up there. And I think, like, when you talk about the best players in the association now, with LeBron and him starting at 1A, 1B, it's a photo finish.
The most complimentary thing I think you can say about Durant at this point is that I don't know that Golden State has a championship without him over the last couple of years. The shots he made in the finals last year, the way he played – would Harrison Barnes being with that mix have enabled them to win? I'm not so sure. I can say with a pretty strong degree of certainty they don't beat Houston in the playoffs this year without Kevin Durant. So he's not just a guy along for the ride anymore. He is the ride. Like, he's one of, if not the driving force behind this team.
He is the weapon. They had an amazing system in place already with the Splash Brothers and the moving pieces. Draymond Green being the ultimate glue guy, Andre Iguodala coming off the bench or starting in the lineup with the Hampton Five. But Kevin Durant is the weapon. He's the guy that can offset LeBron James. And we talked about it on the show, like, you know, usually you don't have a wash at any position. You never had a wash when Jordan played, you know, where you had that one guy that could be like, yo, look, he can be a wash with Michael Jordan. Or a guy, that one guy where, you know, Kobe can win you a series, but you never had a guy on the team where it's like, we might have the better team, but Kobe can win them a series. But we have a guy that can be a wash with Kobe Bryant. And Shaq had that with possibly Dwayne Wade, where, you know, he can equally match that performance if they had met in the finals. And that's what KD is to equivalent of playing against LeBron James. He's a wash at that position. He can, you know, he can score with the best of them. He can go back at them like where his offense is his defense because he's applying pressure to LeBron and he cannot take those possessions off. So, you know, and all the other guys have to do is just play solid or play well. You know, you saw that in game four in particular. What was it? Game three, actually, in Cleveland, where they didn't have the best shooting performance, but they was able to just, you know, score in double figures, and KD did the rest.
It was that game three was incredible because midway through the third quarter, Golden State has a 5-point lead, and Durant's got like 35, and the next leading scorer is JaVale McGee with 10. And they're still leading on the road in the game that you usually get the best shot from the opposing team. I mean, that they don't win that game for sure, you know, with Steph Curry shooting the way he did without Kevin Durant.
Yeah, it's just it's amazing to see that. And, you know, JaVale McGee, like, unsung hero, don't get a lot of credit.
Should have been
but,
finals MVP. Should have been finals MVP.
I don't know. I'm not going to go that far. But he definitely shouldn't be on Shaqtin' the Fool ever again.
Well, no, I disagree with that because what was it, game one or two?
But I'm saying is he had more great moments or good moments than bad moments.
That doesn't mean you can't, you're off Shaqtin' the Fool. You
he
can
had
be
a brain
great player,
freeze.
He posted up nobody.
Look,
and then he missed the dunk on nobody.
He didn't know where he was at on the court.
Okay.
But I'm going to tell you.
It happens.
If Shaqtin' the Fool continues, then JR is going to get like the – he's going to take all the awards this year.
That's going to be – the game one gaffe will just be like the permanent intro for Shaqtin' the Fool. Like JR running out. LeBron arms out like this.
He got it.
Permanent meme right there. Last question on Durant. Does this finally enable him to let Oklahoma City go? Because – I thought winning a championship last year would, for him, kind of put some punctuation on all that. But then you got to the start of the season, the burner account stuff, and you know, still critical of Russ. Is he capable of putting that completely behind him, or is it always going to kind of linger in his head? Like, you know, maybe it's a social media criticism of somebody that says, "Well, you couldn't do this in Oklahoma City. You had to go jump on a bandwagon," even though we all know that's not true. When it comes to Durant right now, do you think he can let that go?
I think it changes once the narrative change and once the way we report the story, like as, you know, as gatekeepers of this game, like the media has to report this story the right way. Before it was like, wow, I can't believe Kevin Durant actually left OKC and, you know, Russell Westbrook and it, but he left to win. And now that he's done that twice and picked up two MVP trophies on the biggest stage of basketball. Now it's like, okay, that's what he left for. Now, if he didn't leave, like if he left and didn't accomplish those things, now the narrative would be different. It'd be like, why did you even leave? You had a perfect situation. You was playing alongside another MVP in the prime of his career. You guys could have figured it out. Talent, you know, people would have, you know, drawn into that situation. But he left and he accomplished exactly what he needed to accomplish and wanted to accomplish. And I think he should, you know, let go or, you know, shouldn't be on any burner accounts or anything of a sort because, you know, he's achieving and excelling in a major way. So, and he's only going to get better. I think they're going to win another two, you know, if that team stay as assembled.
Well, we know Russ has let it go, right? He just decided the other day to, you know, pick up a 1980s Ice Cube diss track that ended with calling them bozos and saying that's why I went solo.
I don't know, man. Look,
conspiracy. Russ, conspiracy.
It is a conspiracy because, you know, Russ, he posts stuff like that all the time. Like, I follow him, and a couple weeks ago, me, him, and Jimmy was at dinner, and we was talking about basketball in general. He's like, bro, I'm not even looking at no basketball right now. I'm just focusing on my family and spending time with my shorties and, you know, stuff like that. And I genuinely think he means that and stands by that because, you know, whatever's on his mind, he's going to speak about it. And we was in a free environment, and that's exactly what he meant. He was like, man, I'm just focusing on that. I'm not thinking about basketball.
You mentioned that you look at Golden State and they could, you know, win the next couple of championships, two more, three more, whatever it is. What stands in their way as much as anything is complacency, is how do you get motivated year in, year out? And over the last few days, we've been hearing a lot of stories about the difficulties of this season, the challenge of it. On the show, Dwayne Wade, your former teammate, talked about the challenges he faced in the fourth season in Miami. They're going to go into year five with the core of this team probably intact, maybe six, maybe seven. How do you break that complacency? How do you keep that team from becoming stale and motivated to win every single year?
I thought you said, you know, you've done an excellent job of talking about adding hungry pieces at the end, like keeping the core nucleus together, but applying like different ingredients from seven on out where, you know, guys that haven't accomplished those goals, you know, journeymen and people that's, you know, just dying to be in that position or on that stage or have those opportunities where they can accomplish it and be a part of something larger than themselves. And it's a lot of guys out there. It's a lot of guys that'll take less money and play in an organization like that, play with alongside great players, and be able to be a part of history where when you're telling the game or the story of basketball, you're being mentioned, you know, one way or the other. And, you know, I think that's the next phase for them. And I think, you know, a huge blow for the team, positive or negative, would be the meeting with LeBron James. And we touched on it during the show where if the Golden State Warriors say, look, we're going to pass on the meeting with LeBron James, even though he's the best player on the planet, you know, by a short margin still, we like what we got. And it's no point to even have the meeting because we wouldn't adjust anything to make room for him unless he's going to take the exception at $5 million and join what we have.
There really is – I mean, the upside to Golden State recruiting LeBron is LeBron saying, I'm coming, and let's figure it out and figure out how to get there. The downside, as you just said, is it could disrupt the chemistry within your team. You know, because you're not going to have the Hamptons Four go and meet with LeBron James, because if you're Klay Thompson and you're Draymond Green, you understand that if LeBron says, I'm coming, and LeBron's made it clear, he's not coming for cheap. He wants the full max salary that he's owed, $35, $36 million, whatever it's going to be. That means somebody's got to go. So, you know, if you're the Warriors, you take a meeting with LeBron, doesn't that kind of subtly say to some of your guys, we think you're expendable? Like, because you got to know he's not coming for no money.
That's exactly what it says. And, you know, you can't sell your guys on that situation. Like, you can't say, look, I need all you four guys to go out there and actively recruit this guy, with in the back of your mind knowing that one of y'all may be gone because you bringing him to the fold. And if I'm them, I'm looking at it like, hey, if he's taking this seriously and wants to come here, let them figure it out. Because I love what we have. We got three championships together. Some got two. And, look, we're going to keep our nucleus together, so we don't need them.
And maybe that can have a positive effect on that team. Maybe, you know, our GM stands by us. He's not, like, the best player in the world wants a meeting with us, and our GM is saying no because of what it would mean. Bob Myers should just say, we got, you know, $8 million that we can give you. You want it? Come on board. You don't? We're good as is.
Yeah. We're totally fine. We believe in our guys, and we're going to continue to, you know, build and, you know, run the table. You know, it's our time right now. They still, like I said, they still got a 3-year window. I think they're going to find some way somehow to win another two, like we talked about on the show today. Look, they haven't even got to the point where they're making in-season trades or anything like that. They're starting with a team, they're finishing with a team, and they're finishing extremely well in the finals.
Bench is probably the most practical way to go because, you know, David West is a great example, a guy that was in his mid-30s, had been to the brink, you know, the conference finals a couple of times with Indiana, had not been to the finals, had not tasted a championship. Guys like that could really change the culture of the locker room, make it more urgent might be the wrong word, but just really intense during that regular season, because those guys are going to want to win, right? And there's always guys like David West, you know, yeah, guys that are willing to settle for $1 million, $2 million to play at the end of their careers because they want to win. Those guys, I think, could reinvigorate the locker room.
Yeah, that's exactly what you need. You need guys that's, you know, that has professionalism and a certain, you know, it to them. And that can enhance the locker room to even a higher degree, you know, because – you know, look, they're a championship organization. They know how to win. They know how to, you know, rally around each other. They practice camaraderie. You see them in the lowest moments, how they lift each other up, always, you know, being the example and the standard for the association. And I think that you need to adapt, you know, people to that team with those type of personalities. And, you know, if you can bring, and this is a really positive discussion, if you can adapt a guy like a JaVale McGee or Nick Young and, you know, all the antics that he bring and get them to buy into a culture and a system and a way and style of play, and look at what they've been able to accomplish. You know, look how, you know, solid JaVale's been in the last two seasons for them. He had his moments where you saw flashes, but you still see him being a better version of himself. You saw Nick Young being a better version of himself. And, you know, he had his flashes where he did some things that was questionable on the court. He wouldn't be Nick if he didn't. But he still had more good than bad, you know. And that's what that organization and those guys do for each other.
And the greatest postseason or postgame line of all time, Nick Young. I went from getting snitched on to putting a ring on like that.
That was so hard.
Now
and he and look it. Let me tell you, it took Nick a long time to come up with that.
Minutes?
That no, no. A long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because you know. Nick is just funny like that, but, you know, that's something that they probably sat around and say, hey, man, you win a championship, you know, everybody say we're going to Disneyland, you need to say that.
Well, now it's his signature line. Now it's he's
– Now he got a T-shirt coming
video,
out.
Yeah, he got a T-shirt coming out. He's got hats. He's got all sorts of swag.
I went from being a snitch dog to a champion.
I like that. I like that. All right, let's talk about LeBron James, who's going to dominate the storylines for the next few weeks. His free agency – come July 1st, most likely going to opt out of his contract and look around, to say the least. Before we get to where he might go, one thing you and I have talked about on the radio was what happened in Game 1, the end of Game 1. And I thought you said something interesting about how that moment, that extended video we saw in overtime or after a after regulation, said a lot about, you know, LeBron and kind of his sort of leadership style with that team. When you saw the video of after JR's gaffe, they're sitting in the huddle. Nobody's talking. Nobody's talking to JR Smith. LeBron's sitting there. He shows some bad body language after Ty Lue says that they had a timeout. He's not putting his hand in the middle there. Just a long – none of that would a good look for LeBron James. And you – that video said something to you too as well, didn't it?
Yeah, it said a lot. You know – As a father and as a leader of my household, you know, I have to disguise frustration in many ways, you know. So, like, if your kids come in the house and they had a bad day or a bullying situation or whatever the case may be, you have to almost have a poker face to everything. And then, you know, you go in a different, you know, setting where you're in another area of your house or you're having a conversation with your wife, and then you can kind of let some of the emotions out and make the faces that you want to make. And I make that comparison to what you saw in Game 1 with LeBron. You seen him, like, just exhaust every emotional gesture that you possibly can exhaust. Like, he showed you everything. He showed you frustration. He showed you non-confidence in his, you know, his guys, his brothers. And then he tried to reestablish that at the press conference and going into Game 2. But you showed everything, like, you showed real feelings in the moment, you know, and I don't think that you get that back. Like, the best that you can do is kind of put a Band-Aid on it and try to move forward. And I felt like Game 1 is where the series was lost for numerous reasons. Like, I felt like that was the sweep right there. That was it. That's the series over. Like, it was over before it started anyway, but the fighting chance that they had where you can, like, maybe they scratch him or something, you know, everything was just out the door.
Yeah, and, you know, the in that moment, now who knows what would have happened in overtime. Golden State's a great team playing on their home floor. But after watching that video, nobody in that huddle could have left that huddle thinking we've got a chance to win. Like, the best player on the team looked a combination of demoralized and angry at us. And look, you can, I think you can lead through anger at some points too. You can, you know, chew guys out at some point. But in that moment, I don't think JR needed an ass kicking. I think JR needed some building up, be like, man, we need you to make some shots. Overtime, 5 minutes to go, we need you to make some shots. And you didn't see that. You were showing me some videos of old Michael Jordan stuff where Jordan did the opposite. In those key situations, Jordan, and he's always going to be compared to LeBron, Jordan was picking his teammates up and telling them, like, you know, stay focused. You know, this game's not over. We're down X, but we got to keep going. Like, that, you didn't see that from LeBron, and that's going to be a video that sticks to him for a while.
Look, it's already enough pressure playing alongside a great player anyway. So when you mess up, just understand that no one wants to mess up. No one tries to mess up. And when they do, like, it's like, oh, man, I'm so sorry. And they need the biggest pick-me-up. Because when they do well, the best player, the great player on the team is going to get all the credit. And when they do bad, they're going to get all the blame. And then the best player is still going to find somehow, some way, the organization is going to find somehow, some way to highlight them. You know, so it's a win-win for LeBron no matter what. you know, and it was just tough to see JR in that moment and nobody really rallied around him. And then they made the moment more about LeBron, where they had to lift him up, where LeBron, that was a great moment for him to just look at JR, because JR is right in front of him, you know, staring at him like, man, give me something. Like this
thousand mile look in his
face. Yeah, like he had the blank stare, and it's LeBron could have just been like clapped it up and said, we good. Like that would have been like, would have spoke volumes, but just him and the body language and the head and like, oh, gee, like it was a wrap.
And they got the doors blown off them right after that in overtime. Yeah, that video is going to last for a long time. But now here we are as we approach the free agency period. And, you know, LeBron, if you listen to his comments after the game, LeBron said a couple of things that were significant. One is that his family, maybe more than ever before, is going to be involved in this decision. What his family needs, where do they want to live, what is the best situation for his son, specifically probably the older one who's in that basketball pipeline right now. And, you know, according to anyone that watches teenagers play, I guess, is has a chance of being an NBA player down the line. The family stuff first. I mean, how when LeBron's in a situation like that, how significant do you think that's going to be for him?
It's going to be huge. You know, LeBron's been extremely successful on and off the court, and he's been a guy that always talk about, you know, family and how important that, you know, family is to him. And you saw the story, right? You saw the production on display, you know, live and direct in game four, where he walks off the stage, he acknowledges the guys that's on the court from the Golden State Warriors, and then he walks off the court for the last time possibly ever in Cleveland. And his wife is there in the tunnel, and, you know, he gives her the, you know, the kiss, and, you know, that's the picture right there. It's like, look, it's all about this right here. And it's kind of shifting the energy and letting you know that don't just blame me, because I want my family to be happy and I'm thinking life after basketball. And when you look at a player, a professional player, any athlete, it's layers. Like, you're the summer of your career where you're trying to figure it out, and then you have the legacy stability where you're in the trenches and you're trying to cement your legacy where you're winning championships and all-star games and what have you. And then that next phase, if you're fortunate to get to it, the winner of your career, the back end of your career, you establish yourself and put yourself in position and your family to, you know, have the seamless transition in life after basketball or football or baseball or whatever the case may be. And I think LeBron's looking for, you know, the most thriving situation. He's already in the production industry, in the entertainment industry, creating content, movies, et cetera. Uninterrupted is out here in California. It makes perfect sense for him to make this transition out here.
By the way, LeBron has more handshakes with people that I can keep track of. He's got like special handshakes with his two kids as well there. I mean, I don't know how you see him before games. He's got like, I don't know how you probably had plenty of them in your, I don't know how you guys keep track of them, like of them all.
It's, you know, a creature of habit, and it kind of registers once you see, you know, that individual in front of you, where you just have a routine that you just remember. You know, it's amazing.
I saw Quinn Cook and Rodney Hood had a handshake after game four. Like, they had one. Like,
it's crazy, man. Like, it's just, I can't describe it. It's just like everybody knows and connected a certain way where you just do the same thing. And then it's just like, before you know it, it's like, dang, I just did 100 things that I didn't even realize that I remember. It's just part of your daily. Mm. Yeah, that's what it is.
The putting aside Golden State, as we talked about them, and that's a tough needle for them to thread, even if they wanted to recruit LeBron James. What makes best basketball sense for him? Because the other part of the thing he said was that I'm still in championship mode. You can see that. 33 years old, he's still playing at an extremely high level, leading the NBA in minutes in the regular season, leading the NBA in minutes in the postseason. There's no drop-off in LeBron James as a player right now. So he's going to look for a team that can help him win a championship. What makes the most sense to you?
It's a few teams. Starting with the Eastern Conference, I have to say the Philadelphia 76ers, devoid of not having a general manager, makes perfect sense from top to bottom with him and his camp. Also, the Boston Celtics.
How dangerous is that, though, in Philly? Like, to – I know what you're saying. Like, you know, you bring in LeBron and it empowers his guys too as well. But LeBron's been at his best when he's just been a basketball player. Like, his best years came in Miami when Pat Riley ran the team, Eric Spoelstra coached it, and everything else was just basketball. You know, it's when he gets too involved in personnel decisions or there's too much power from some of the people in his camp. That's when it seems like things get a little bit slippery.
He won both ways, though.
He did. He got the title in Cleveland.
Yeah, so he won both ways, and I think that the title in Cleveland is probably the best story in sports history. You know, definitely one of them. So you look at that situation. So Philadelphia makes a ton of sense. Boston makes a ton of sense from a basketball standpoint. He's talking about, you know, joining forces with Kyrie with the young nucleus of talent that they have already assembled.
Kyrie would want to play with him again?
You just said basketball.
Okay. Well, yeah.
They can win.
Well, from a basketball perspective, you don't break up the Celtics.
Yeah.
No way.
You can win right now with LeBron James on the Celtics for that. Now the dynasty that you see assembled in Golden State, that can be on the Eastern Conference. Now you really got the East-West thing popping. You know, so that's amazing.
Then the Celtics are going to win without LeBron James. You and I both know.
You hope.
No, you know that. You and I both know.
I hope so.
That's a lock.
I hope so.
Like, let's throw some cash on the table.
They got to get there first.
They do have to get there first.
And chemistry is huge.
21-year-olds, Kyrie coming back, Gordon coming back. That's a juggernaut, man.
21-year-olds that everybody's trying to be the man.
That's true. Then we discussed this too, but the who's going to go to the bench argument is a legitimate one.
Yeah, all that stuff is a part of chemistry. Like, everybody wants to be the man. Everybody wants to be the guy. We was able to accomplish this last year, and I averaged this, I did this, and now Kyrie's back. He's going to be ball dominant still. It's a lot of ifs. It's a lot of things. Like, chemistry is so huge, and the reason why they was able to get to where they had to get to because everyone knew that they was going to have their fair share of moments where they can utilize their talent and ability, and it wasn't top-heavy being relied on just one particular guy. But now it's going to be different. And are you okay with playing that role? You know? Like, think about it. Brown or Tatum wouldn't have had the opportunity that they had if Gordon Hayward was there because he's the guy. He's the, you know, the heavy-paid guy. He's the all-star. He's the next one. So those guys would have had to sit on the sideline and watch him, and then now their growth would have been hindered because he was available. But since he wasn't available, we saw, you know, the potential, scary potential of those guys going forward.
All right, we'll get back to my conversation with Caron Butler in just a second. But today's episode of the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast is brought to you by our friends at Away. Away was founded by two friends from New York who found themselves at JFK with dead phones, delayed flights, and a bright idea. Luggage with power. Thus, the Away carry-on was born. It really is the perfect luggage. Inspired by true travel stories, we asked thousands of people how they pack, why they travel, and what bugs them the most about their luggage. Then we designed a bag that solved a few old problems like sticky wheels and a few new ones like dead cell phones. Away uses high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman and selling directly to you. You can choose from a variety of colors and four sizes, the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or the large. That's for extended stays. All suitcases are made with premium German polycarbonate, unrivaled in strength and impact resistance. They're also extremely lightweight, very easy to use. The interior features a patent-pending compression system, helpful for the overpackers like me. Four 360-degree spinner wheels guarantee a smooth ride. TSA-approved combination locks built into the top of the bag to prevent theft, and a removable, washable laundry bag keeps dirty clothes separate from clean. Both sizes of the carry-on are able to charge all cell phones, tablets, e-readers, anything else that's powered by a USB cord. A single charge of the Away carry-on will charge your iPhone 5 times. And an added bonus, there's a lifetime warranty, so if anything breaks, we will fix or replace it for you for life. Away also offers a 100-day trial. Live with it, vibe with it, travel with it, Instagram it. If at any point you decide it's not for you, return it for a full refund. No questions asked. There's free shipping on any Away order within the lower 48 states. Away's carry-on sizes are compliant with all major U.S. airlines, and you can maximize the amount you pack. If you're in town, please be sure to visit Away at their retail store in New York City. I can tell you, as I traveled out here to LA, I packed all my stuff in my away suitcase. I charged my phone out of the terminal. I'm going to charge my phone on it when I get back to my hotel room a little bit later on. It's a terrific product. I highly recommend it. For my listeners, good deal coming to you here. You get $20 off a suitcase. All you have to do is go to awaytravel.com/Mannix and use promo code Mannix during checkout. That's simple. So again, $20 off a suitcase by visiting awaytravel.com/Mannix and using promo code Mannix during the checkout. That's awaytravel.com/Mannix using promo code Mannix during checkout. I had one GM say to me earlier in the year that when it comes to free agency, LeBron James likes chaos. He likes having a lot of teams trying to go get him, and he likes to have a lot of pieces on the board. And what he meant by that was a lot of potential free agents. Like, for example, I think LeBron would have loved it if Russell Westbrook didn't sign that extension and was in the mix to be someone he could team up with whatever team this summer. Russell did, but you've got Paul George out there. You've got DeMarcus Cousins out there. I would imagine, I've never been part of a process like this, obviously, but I would imagine that he's going to spend the next few weeks talking to a lot of people, whether it's Paul George, DeMarcus Cousins, you know, where do you guys want to play? What's your move out there? I think there's going to be a lot of conversations going back and forth between some of the marquee guys and LeBron James.
Yeah, you know, Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, Paul George, DeMarcus Cousins, just a few of the names that just jump out there at you. You know, it's going to be a lot of situations where, you know, he's going to have to figure out, you know, what's the best scenario for him. And then you look at the Lakers and the Houston Rockets from a basketball standpoint, that makes the most sense. The Lakers makes the most sense because you're talking about preserving your career and having a guy like Brandon Ingram and potentially Paul George or Chris Paul or one of those guys that come along with you with a Kuzma and Lonzo Ball already there. They have an amazing team, you know, in place already, you know, in an amazing market. And, you know, it'll just speak volumes if they can make it back to the finals and possibly win in Los Angeles.
Does, you know, Houston, as far as we know right now, Chris Paul's trying to recruit LeBron to play there in Houston. Now, that could change. Obviously, Chris Paul's going to be an unrestricted free agent July 1st as well. But for argument's sake, if LeBron goes to Houston, the Rockets with the core of Harden, Paul, and LeBron, how do you compare that to what Golden State has, especially in year one?
That'd be amazing. I still don't think that they're better than them. I still don't think so. I think that they'll put them like right there where they have a 50-50 chance in a series where anything can happen. But I still don't think that put them over the hump.
And if he, you know, the other part of it is I don't think Cleveland's out of the mix either. I think Cleveland is possible. I think it's less likely than some of these other places. But the Cavaliers would have to do something to that roster. I mean, you can't – LeBron's not coming back to that team. Because you come back to that team, you know what the ceiling is. I mean, you just played out of your damn mind for an entire season, and you still came up short, well short, against Golden State. They would have to make a substantive change. Maybe it involves that number 8 pick. Maybe it involves a trade of Kevin Love. But they would have to make a substantive change for LeBron James to come back.
Well, Kevin Love played remarkably well in this playoff run. And when he was available, he, you know, 20-10 guy. Extremely solid, so he's something that you can, you know, dangle out there. You also have that pick, which you touched upon, that you can do something with, turn that into something. So they have some flexibility, but then they also have the contracts of a J.R. Smith. They have Tristan Thompson, and, you know, they have things that's, you know, it's not going to be as easy to move. You know, you saw the whole Iman Shumpert situation and how hard it was to, you know, get him out of there, and then not having nothing to show for the Kyrie deal, pretty much. You know, Isaiah Thomas is gone. Dwayne Wade ended up leaving. Crowder is in Utah. Like, they have to figure out something to, you know, a carrot to, like, sit him down and be like, yo, all right, I'm intrigued by this.
Let me finish with this. DeMarcus Cousins is a guy that you played with in Sacramento. He's going to be a free agent in New Orleans. Before his injury, it seemed like it was a pretty strong likelihood that not only would he be back in New Orleans, but he might even get that max contract that he's been craving for the last couple of years. Now, a lot of things are in flux. The Pelicans played really well with him being out. It seems like Mirotić and Anthony Davis on that front line seems to work. And Cousins is coming off that Achilles injury, which for an NBA player is as significant an injury as you're going to have out there. Let me ask you first, what did you think of the pairing of Cousins and Davis together? Because it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I wasn't sure the two bigs could work like that. It looked good to me. What did it look like to you?
It looked good. It looked solid, you know. And, you know, I had the luxury of talking to Coach Gentry just last week where we did a show and we was calling the game together. And I asked him about that. I said, how did that mesh? Because, you know, I obviously didn't think that wasn't work. I didn't think the thing in Houston with Chris Paul would work because him and James Harden, ball dominant guys, player usage, et cetera. And he was like, look, they – just conquered the paint like they did exactly because they're different and unique in the same way. Like both guys can play on the perimeter, they can stretch out. DeMarcus don't rely on athletic ability where Anthony Davis can be in the paint and playing the traditional five. You can put DeMarcus at the four, but defensively AD can guard every position. So you can like plug him pretty much anywhere. So that's why it was able to exist. And then you have a smart basketball mind in Rondo where you know, he was able to handle the ball and then put a Holiday at the two. So it made a mix for a perfect team. And then when you saw the injury, I felt like DeMarcus was such a huge part of it. Even though he went down, he had them headed in the right direction. You know, they was at like the four seed in the Western Conference and playing exceptionally well. And with the guys in place, they was able to keep that consistent and keep that momentum in their favor to go into the playoffs and, you know, bring some excitement back to New Orleans basketball. So I hope that, you know, he gets extremely healthy again, which I know he will. I don't question that.
How do you
that.
Think that injury, you know, a big man like that.
Still max.
Yeah, still
he's
max.
Still, I mean, look, you're not going to – it's not going to be a number conversation when you sit down talking about DeMarcus Cousins. He's going to sit down and say, if you're not saying max, he's going to lead the table. I think unless he wants to stay in New Orleans. If he wants to stay in New Orleans, then he might make adjustments and be like, yo, I really want to be here and I want to play with these guys and I'm willing to take less. But that has to be his call or his side call because, you know, when you talk about the best big man in sports and basketball in the association and you look at numbers and you look at it, what that criteria is, he's the best big in basketball, you know, if healthy. He's still the best big.
It seems like a pretty big risk to take if you're the Pelicans or anybody.
Huge
not,
risk.
Not just because, and look, he's an incredibly talented guy, but I always get wary of guys playing really well in contract years because I don't know what DeMarcus Cousins is without the carrot of a contract out there, you know, without him having to kind of work for. You give him a five-year deal, is there any complacency in DeMarcus Cousins? And then you couple that with the injury. I mean, he might be the riskiest free agent on the market this summer.
Yeah, he's going to compete. I could tell you that. Being in Sacramento, he's going to compete. He's going to put up the numbers. You look at it every year. He's always had great numbers. You know, even, you know, losing. And I know that sometimes they're inflated. The numbers are extremely inflated when you're losing. But you can look at a ton of Hall of Famers that played that, you know, got inflated numbers because they was losing. And then the organization that say, look, you just get buckets because we don't care about everything else around you. We want to enhance your numbers so you can be an all-time great. And you see that with a lot of guys. But with him, he's going to compete. He's going to bring it. And the only thing I worry about is his health. And, you know, like the last conversation we had, he said that he's eating healthy, he's eating the right way, he's trying to get lean. But that's the only thing I worry about when it comes to him.
And weirdly, they might have to choose in New Orleans between Cousins and Rajon Rondo because, you know, Rondo, because of the cap situation, you could only offer him like $3 million if you bring Cousins back. If you don't, that number goes up to like 8 or 9. They might have to decide who's more valuable to them down there because Rondo had a great season in New Orleans. It seems like he and Alvin Gentry, they work together as coach and player.
Yeah, well, I think the guy that's most valuable is DeMarcus Cousins. He's the reason why Rondo was there because, you know, Rondo had a great stint with him in Sacramento, and he reached out because Rondo's having a tough time even getting a look or a job opportunity, you know, after leaving Chicago and the fallout again where smoke there's fire, people questioning so many things about him and his character. And, you know, DeMarcus like, look, that's my guy. I want to play with my guy. He knows me. He knows how to win with us and all Kentucky guys. And they pulled it together and they played for one another and let the chips fall where they may. So now they're showing that, look, Rondo's a huge asset again. So if DeMarcus don't come back for the max or whatever the dollar amount may be with the Pelicans, now you have a chance where you can reward Rondo for what he brought to the table. And I think is the right thing to do, you know, but they're going to address DeMarcus before they address Rondo.
Should be fun. This summer could be pretty wild.
Ooh, with, say the
all
least.
Things out there. There's a lot of guys we didn't even talk about. Paul George, others that are sitting out there on the market. Going to be a wild next few weeks. Karan, always great to see you, man. Thanks for joining me here on the podcast.
Appreciate you.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Karan Butler for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.